exciting step to take, and we're really lucky to have two eminently qualified and resourceful consultants and writers that have experience with working with both sides, but both have pretty extensive experience with one or the other, and that'll be really helpful as we go into the strike. So I would just get that off in the intro, and I'll go around and keep introducing me.
Should I just introduce myself?
Sure.
And just so we can start roles. So I'm Tracy Packer, and I'm the director of the Community Health Equity and Promotion Branch, and we're in the population health side of the health department. Dean's on the other side. So it's, you know, it's interesting, this merge and all this work together is uniting the health department in new ways as well as the councils. So it's very exciting, although we've always worked with it together. It didn't really matter how we were structured. But I think that it's symbolic of how things are so well coordinated by all of your work and so many other pieces. I'm going to say more about the plan and that later when on number four. So today I would just say welcome and thank you for taking this on to help us think through this integrated plan, how we're all going to work together and have this plan on the other end of this. It's going to be really directing all of the HIV work in San Francisco. It's very exciting. So I just wanted to say that. So should we start with Daryl?
Daryl Lampkin with San Mateo County Department of Public Health Policy and Planning, and I work with the HIV Convention.
Hello, I'm Dan Cavallo.
Hi everyone, I'm Linda
Olivengo,
Care Council
Co-Chair. Mark Moore, Council Staff.
Chip Sapanich, Care Council Co-Chair.
Liz Stumm, Council Staff.
Holly Cohn, Care Council Staff.
Kevin Hutchcroft, HIV Health Services.
I'm Robert Worry. I'm a freelance consultant who works with CareSide San Francisco, and I've written the last couple of care plans with the Planning Council, and I write the Ryan White Part A grant every year for San Francisco, so I've been involved on that side.
Keith Gonzalez, Prevention Co-Chair.
I'm Mike Dreyer. I am a consultant, and I have been working the past 2 or 3 years now with prevention and care and a couple of different initiatives, and just finished the San Francisco update to the jurisdictional plan over the summer.
Oscar Mesilla, City of Prevention, Planning Council, support staff.
Eric Sutter, Care Council.
All right, so if you take a look at the agenda.
Mark, can I ask a question? I'm just wondering if there are people expected that aren't here yet.
Yes, we have two Care Council members, Matthew Miller and TJ Lee, and one Prevention Council member, Kate Monica. So if everyone could take a look at the agenda, any changes or updates to the agenda? Any opposed to approving the agenda as written? No? Seeing none, the agenda for today is approved. Any public comment? And just as a reminder of for Care Council folks and maybe something new for Prevention Council folks, public comment can be made by anyone in the room, including council members. You can actually step outside of your role and make a comment as public. Seeing no public comment, Tracy and Dean.
I kind of jumped in and did my part of it during the introduction. But again, for those of you that joined us after, just that this is our first large project working as representatives of one group working on one product, and it's an exciting step for us as we move toward merging as a new council, and working with Robert and Michael will be very exciting and rewarding and easy and graceful, as it's always been my experience in the past year. So we're looking forward to that and how that's going to come together with other projects that the department and the councils are involved in.
And I just wanted to say a couple things that I think it's so nice that the requirement for an integrated plan came at the same time as the councils came together. And so it works really nicely. It's very symbolic. I think that it's important for us to see this as an opportunity to document the successes of all of the work that all of you have done, whether it was in two separate councils or how you will be successful coming together. And I think it's important for us to think about and talk about getting to zero. Getting to zero is, you know, it's an international and national movement to getting to new HIV and getting to zero new HIV infections, zero HIV/AIDS related deaths, and zero stigma and discrimination. I know all of you know all of that. And there's also Fast Track Cities, which is also an international initiative that started in Paris at the International AIDS Conference, and there's many cities that have signed on to that. You know, here in San Francisco, there's a Getting to Zero initiative that I think is getting broader and broader in terms of its base. How many people in here have been involved in that so far? So I think that by the end of this, we should all be a part of it, because getting to zero is because of all of you and what your work has been. There's no way that San Francisco would be able to even talk about getting to zero new infections if it wasn't for the years and years of the Ryan White Care dollars being overseen by the Care Council and the HIV prevention priorities being set by the council and by all of your work as community members, whichever way that, you know, whatever you do. And so I feel that getting to zero can sometimes be seen separate from us, and it is us. Because it's based on the work that we're doing. And I think that this plan is actually an opportunity for us to document how the work that we've done is the work that's getting us to zero. I'm not saying we're the only people, right? there's the clinical work outside of what's funded and many other pieces that have to be acknowledged. But I think it's our opportunity to write all that down in this plan. And so I think it makes a lot of sense for us to use the Getting to Zero umbrella as our theme. If we don't, I think we're kind of not connecting to this movement that we're going in. It'll be great to have that conversation to see what people think and people's concerns about that. But I think it's really important and beneficial for us, because the mayor is really embracing the Getting to Zero terminology initiative as the HIV work that's being done. So I think that will be an advantage, and this is our opportunity to put all that in a plan. So it seems like we're ready. That's what I wanted to share. I think there were some specifics, though, that the consultants wanted to share.
Well, Robert, I guess I'll just do our scope of work.
Sure.
Just so you have an idea of what our role is, mainly is to help you craft and put together all of this work that Tracy and Dean talked about into a document that follows the very prescribed guidance from HRSA and CDC about what the integrated plan should be. So we will be facilitating that process and assisting all of you developing the materials as needed for your review, and either one or both of us will be here at the meetings. Once you establish co-chairs and a meeting scheduled between now and the deadline for this group would be August, the joint meeting, for it to be approved, although the plan is not actually due until September, right? So, Robert, anything?
Yeah, I think, well, you know, I'm definitely planning to be at every meeting if I can. I think we talked about the writing, and I think that I may be taking the lead on a lot of the writing, but what I really look forward to is just, you know, the fun of this is kind of, it's a chance to articulate kind of a merged vision of prevention and care for the first time. I mean, there will always be separate elements, but, and it's also a 5-year plan instead of a 3-year plan, as it usually is, so, you know, it gives us a way to think a little further out and come up with some timelines to get somewhere. So I'm just really excited about it, because I think it's a chance to be creative and, again, find a way to kind of create this new vision of prevention combined with care. I think we're already there in a lot of ways, but I think that'll be really fun to kind of work out. And, again, the timing, Tracy's right with the council, is great. So. That's it.
Any other comments, thoughts, questions on this agenda item? All right, so moving on, work group membership and voting structure. This is in some ways two different things, connected, of course. Work group membership. So we did establish a potential list of members through the doodle of that collected interested parties. However, the membership should be established at this meeting. It's particularly important in terms of quorum, particularly moving forward. Quorum is highly important. If we don't reach quorum, then we can't vote on things. So that said, I'd like to ask the group if everyone who's here in the room would like to be considered as members of this group, which means counted towards quorum, which also means that you could then be relied on to actually come to this meeting on a monthly basis. If not, no bad, but just make sure that we're aware of that. With that, would everyone like to be considered a member of this group or a council member? I've seen some vague nods.
Tentative.
Four vague nods there. Is there a
fellow coaches not on the DVD?
I know.
Once a month.
So another soft yes.
Yes.
Okay. And then there are four other people here. One who's listed as excused. What I'm going to ask Allie to do is actually just connect with those four, keeping in mind the importance of quorum, whether they'd like to be considered as members of the group or not. Again, all meetings are certainly open to any council member to come and add their thoughts.
Members.
On the care side, Matthew Miller and T.J. Lee. On the prevention side, Nan O'Connor has been marked as excused, and Kate Monaco Klein.
Okay.
So I'll ask Allie to connect unless you feel
like was, no, Dallas also would like to bring Cecily Emerson from our prevention side. She's expressed interest in being part of the work group.
Okay.
So
I'll ask Allie to connect with her as well. Again, for me, the important thing is not so much whether a person is here or not, it's about being able to actually vote on items in the forum. So mm-hmm. If Cecily does feel she would be to attend intermittently,
yep.
It might be best if she not be considered a member. You see what I mean? It's all just about moving forward within what clearly is a shorter time frame. Yep. All right, so there's that. Any other thoughts on membership? Voting. So this will require a vote on the voting. There has been two different formats from two different councils, and one format that's really has been kind of in the middle. On the prevention council, work group voting actually is held by actual members. On the care council, work group and committees, any council member who attends a work group or committee meeting can vote, member of the group or not. In past collaborative work groups, whether it was the collaborative work group or the transition team or the current joint leadership work group, the group has decided to use the prevention paradigm, which is that members only vote. Of course, every other member is welcome to attend and contribute to the discussion. So what needs to happen is for this group to decide which of those models it would like to use moving forward. Again, keeping in mind that we do want to make sure that work can be accomplished in each meeting. So to that end, there should be a discussion, and then hopefully a motion from one of you that puts forward one of those models.
I want to speak in favor of the prevention model, only because I think it's really important, given the scope and speed of this group, that people attend every meeting that's possible. And I don't think that people drifting in and out is necessarily conducive to making a good plan. Everyone's welcome, of course, but I think voting should be restricted to membership and be the best bet.
If there's no other thoughts, would you like to frame that as a motion?
Sure. I move that voting be restricted to membership.
Is there a second to that motion? Ideally, there's a second from... All right, then. Any opposed to the model put forward by the motion? Carries. So with that said, we move on to the next agenda item, which is electing two co-chairs. Ideally, representation from both the prevention and the care council will be reflected within the two co-chairs. So that said, it's now open for motions.
Can I ask a question before we do that? What exactly are going to be the responsibilities of the co-chairs? I know they'll be working with the consultants, but...
I think because the consultants are doing the vast majority of the writing, vast meaning all, that my understanding, please, Dean and Tracy, if you have a different understanding, is the primary role of the co-chairs will actually be working with the consultants to generate and put forward agendas.
There might be another role, I'm not sure, which might be when we have developed sort of recommendations to go before the council, the co-chairs might present those as well. I think
right.
that might be nice.
That's a great
but
idea.
Not hard, but something else to maybe.
I think also, isn't it facilitates and meetings when it's not the facilitators?
Oh, I'm sorry, I thought that was interesting. Yes, the co-chairs facilitate the meeting. That often, I think, in work groups where the consultants are doing the vast amount of the work means handing off most of the meeting to the consultants, but certainly opening the meeting and any kind of discussions that have to be led by respective councils.
Mm-hmm.
So the floor is now open for nominations for co-chair.
Well, I'd actually be interested in being co-chair.
So
I have high interest in the integrated plan. I've attended every single webinar and workshop at every recent conference on the integrated plan, and I have just invested interest in the plan.
Hey, is there a second to this motion?
I'll second it.
Okay, looking for one more.
Yeah, it would have been nice.
That was the hope of
several.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
we don't want to double do you. So there's potentially Matthew and TJ, too, that could be. I mean, we can't elect them today because we didn't ask them, but.
Right.
I mean, it just seems like a lot to have to share. Even though you guys are fabulous.
Well, having a prevention and a care council member is the ideal format, but it's not the absolute format. If there's another prevention council member who would like to self-nominate or nominate another, if there's no care council members who feel up to the task of co-chairing, that's, I think, also not ideal, but acceptable. Of course, you can always have the one co-chair option. Which I've never seen, but potentially be something.
Sure.
The only challenge, I think, with having a prevention and prevention co-chair duo is any reporting back to the care council would have to be from prevention.
Would it be possible to have the prevention co-chair elected this meeting and the care co-chair elected the next meeting if more people or care com and just let them know that there will be a vote for a co-chair from care? So
that's absolutely possible, but keeping in mind we might there may be no more.
Right.
You know, mm-hmm. they'd have to be contacted and certainly their actual availability as the months go by. Discussed. So any other potential nominations?
I'm not nominating anyone. I don't want to put anybody on the spot, but I think we could look at moving forward with one currently and see if there's someone that emerges to add a co, but based on the roles and the duties assigned and the fact that Ben is involved in so many webinars and on top of it has a lot of it in his head already and is eager. Eagerish.
So Ben,
that could be one of the structures as well.
Keeping in mind that this may change, would you be comfortable being solo chair? Because it may not change. All right.
And I would volunteer to present.
Okay.
Okay, but I just can't be a co-chair of another thing right now. Mm-hmm. Just don't have the bandwidth.
All right. Any other nominations before nominations are closed?
This is not a nomination either. I just wanted to emphasize the importance of having someone from each council. I know that isn't so easy, but just...
It is ideal. All right. Any opposed to the motion on the floor? Congratulations, Chair.
We won't be too hard.
So, as the chair, I now turn over the full facilitation deal to you.
Whoa.
Wow. Fire by fire.
Wow. Let's see. Our next agenda item is item 7, where Robert and Michael will be reviewing the CBC versus integrated HIV prevention study here at Edwards.
Can you travel?
Yeah. Anyone see that?
Yeah.
Okay.
You just tell me when to.
Okay, you can skip these next few slides. I'll tell you when to keep on. Yeah, so like that.
That's what I
So we did distribute the actual guidance from CDC and HRSA, and it's pretty dense. There is, even though it looks not that thick, there's a lot of depth there and a lot of information that they are seeking, and very specific way that they would like to have the plan laid out. So what Robert and I want to do, this is from, we're presenting to you, this was from the webinar that CDC and HRSA did together in when the guidance was first released. And I, maybe Ben, you were on that webinar. So it was very, very long, but we pulled out what we thought was essential for this meeting to sort of get you familiar with the guidance and the content of the guidance, and we're happy to provide the link to the full presentation for people to take a look at if you would like, and it's available online, and we can certainly make that available. So what we're going to review today is sort of generally what are the different sections of the guidance, what is being required of each of these jurisdictions around the country in terms of putting together something that is integrated between care and prevention. So, next slide. So, next one. So, the integrated, the idea for the integrated plan has been germinating for a while in CDC and HRSA, and they've been sending out notices for a while that this is coming. And in February, a couple of years ago, now it's been 2 years, was when that first joint letter came out. I remember seeing that to each of the areas that this more integration between care and prevention should start happening. The result now is a fully developed guidance for writing a comprehensive multi-year integrated plan. So there has been some extensive thought about the reasons for developing or requiring integration. I think with prevention technology advancing the way it has, there makes more sense for the two areas to be much more in sync and folded together. This is sort of the justification and reasoning behind the CDC and HRSA thinking about it, which is streamlining communication between the councils and prevention and care providers, better coordination, really focusing on the care continuum, which we will be revealing as well, and how each aspect of care and prevention does provide some foundation for improving health outcomes within and along the care continuum. It provides a sort of a broader net to bring more people into the process, perhaps, and it's a better way of really maximizing resources between the two agencies. So
And there are a number of There are a number of policy initiatives that have been released over the past, I'd say, probably 4 or 5 years that have been driving towards this. And probably most of them you're all familiar with, certainly the National HIV-AIDS Strategy, which was just re-released with new goals and objectives. And the 2013 official sort of endorsement of the HIV continuum of care by the president's executive order, and the high impact HIV prevention initiative released by CDC. So all of these efforts, policy initiatives, have all been sort of bringing together the idea of care and prevention slowly but surely to this point now. So, and one of the focus that is stated here in the guidance is that there is a need to reduce reporting burden for grantees, and this is a way to improve some efficiency around those administrative black holes of reporting.
They won't accomplish it, but it's nice that that's all.
It's all better way of bringing those two things together. So, so integrated planning. I think you both councils are starting to become familiar with this. I know 2 years ago we started toying with the idea of an integrated care and prevention council, and now more work recently has been done in that area. And it's basically the process for bringing together the two planning groups to develop a strategic plan, a multi-year strategic plan that brings in all of the information that each of these planning groups have been working with for many years, and figuring out a way to create one integrated and streamlined set of ideas and policies that can support the work of both care and prevention. And there are a lot of ways of doing it, and you have chosen to put together this work group to put the plan together, and as I understand, it's starting to work towards integration of the councils as well. So some areas of the country have already integrated, others are not going to for right away, but I think that CDC and HRSA are, the expectation is that ultimately there will be one unified process going forward. Next, and Robert.
Okay, yeah, so I'm just going to go over kind of the components. You can go to the next one. Should I tap like this?
Yeah.
I'll snap. That'll be very authoritarian.
No snapping.
Okay, we won't. Don't worry. I was kidding. That was satiric. So I'll just run through the basic components. This is a little bit more like the care plan guidance than the prevention plan, but it won't be strange to prevention either, you know, but it really is almost identical to care. So what that says about the relationship between HRSA and CDC and planning this, I don't know. Read in what you like. Go ahead. It has four basic sections. You know, you have kind of the background. You have your plan, which is really the goals and objectives, action steps, and that's what this group will really, I think, be spending its time on. Mm-hmm. And then the third is how to monitor. And then the fourth is, submitting it. The period of the plan is January 1, 2017 through December 31, 2021. Okay, next. So all jurisdictions have to do this, and it has to follow the guidance. That's easy. Next. So just want to emphasize one thing as you read the guidance. It really is written towards states preparing the plan, because I think their orientation is that most states are small enough that it can encompass a plan. Maybe it'll have one EMA in it, but generally it's seen as statewide. But in a state like California, obviously, you know, the feeling is it can't capture everything. So I believe we went through a process of communicating with the states, I know other EMAs have, to say, are we going to do one plan or work individually? And obviously, in California, the decision is made. LA has to do their own San Francisco has to do their own. East Bay here is doing their own. So we have to do all of the same things that are in the guidance, even though you'll see it's written for the state. So the state is also doing all this needs stuff and doing a plan of action. So one critical thing we have to be sure of is that we have representation on the statewide process, so we know what's going on and have some correspondence. You know, we obviously don't do the same things, but we need to know. So just let me ask, is anyone at this table on the state process, or?
They reached out and asked if we were going to be doing our own or participating and joining theirs. And based on conversations we had at the councils and in the sessions, our response was we're doing our own. So we, I don't think any of us have joined that group. I didn't realize that we should, but
I think
we could touch base and figure out how to.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm not going to say, but I think it would be useful to have someone participating in the state process just to sort of know what's going on, you know, to kind of, but it's not essential, you know, but there could be some interesting things that come out of that statewide process that we can incorporate, or things we could share there, but just a suggestion from the consultant.
I think that's a great idea, Robert. I mean, I think we're always so busy here in San Francisco that we, like, the state law. But I do think we should be aware of what's going on. So even I can follow up with that and get more information about their process and bring it back here so everyone knows.
Yeah,
would
your
recommendation
like
be for DPH representation at the state level, membership from here, for example, the chair? Is there any suggestion either way?
No, I think generally it tends to be council members on the prevention of care side. I think that's the perfect would be bad. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be ideal.
I think we have to see what they're asking.
Yeah.
But
I think they just got started, you know, like everyone, so, yeah.
Do you know if there's any connectivity to their, I forget what it's called, the California Planning Group?
Is that what it is?
We do have representation there, at least through Matt Geltmaker.
Right.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But so it sounds like they might be different, although connected groups.
Or there may be like a larger group that's doing it. I don't really know what the process looks like, sorry. But yeah, definitely worth finding out. Yeah. Okay, so as I read through, just you know, have in your head that this applies to us, even though we'll talk about states. So statewide court is statement of need. So clearly, this is also our own. Next one. So the SCSN is an established process. It's been going on for years, where the state establishes need, and they're just plugging it into this planning process. Basically, for our purposes, it's our local planning an information gathering process for this plan. Next. So the first thing we have to do is provide an epidemiologic overview, which we'll do. I think Michael and I started to talk about at the next meeting, one thing that might be useful is to present sort of some really basic background on where we are and the information we have. And one thing we'll probably put together is a brief epidemiological presentation. But this jurisdiction is second to none, I know, because I work in a lot in California, and in getting epi information, so this is not a problem. You know, and we just have to describe all, you know, basically where the epidemic is at right now. And for the plan, we'll frame it in terms of our initiatives. You know, so whatever we're going to sort of highlight as activities, we'll particularly emphasize data on that. You know?
Yeah, I've got an email today from some national planning bodies, and they said that the CDC and HRSA has put together a webinar like on March 10th that has an integrated epidemiologic profiles for HIV prevention and care planning. It's for CDC, DHAB, HRSA, HAB, and planning councils to all basically go through this like an hour and a half. So it's on March 10th.
Oh, okay. Well, we should.
David, can you forward that to Allie? And then, Allie, could you forward it to
the
group?
Yeah, I was about
group?
To forward it to you guys. I just got it right now. So, to you. To Betty. Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see if they put together a proposed structure for this section.
Yeah.
It's always been sort of free flowing, which I like. But
it's basically like everybody who's doing this from community to the Department of Health needs to be on this thing.
Okay. All right. Cool. Thank you.
Yeah.
I did not know. Okay. So that's the FE overview. Then we also have to present the continuum in the jurisdiction. And, you know, it's just interesting that it says care continuum there. You know, there's some elements that they still haven't quite merged yet, you know, and I maybe that's partly this prevention as care mentality is seeping in, and I don't, the language is interesting. I don't know if they're trying to enforce it. I think it's an oversight, but, you know, whatever. They say care continuum. But we basically describe, you know, how it works. I mean, in the, you know, we present the continuum, that standard chart of, you know, you all know it, like diagnosis, number of people linked positive, people linked to care, people who drop out, which we have, we just updated for the Part A grant, actually, last year. But then I think we need to talk about disparities along this continuum, and, you know, we'll get to that, actually.
Robert, can I just say something?
Yeah.
I think that this is the actual term that's being used now, HIV
right.
care continuum, rather than cascade.
Oh, right.
That's something that we all use, but I think people didn't like the term cascade because it implies that it will always decrease,
right.
and the goal is for it to be
right.
equal, so I think that's the
and
shift.
It was the
so,
right.
And it started as treatment cascade, but we're all looking at it as a tool that you know, it's a prevention and care
yeah.
tool, so I think that it's actually
yeah.
something we share.
And there's little controversies within the continuum about how we define it locally versus nationally, which we can talk about later, but you know, I think the key thing about the continuum is that it gives us a baseline to look at to project improvements in the plan, potentially. We don't have to frame outcomes that way, but for example, if you have a, you know, say 75% viral suppression rate, one objective in the plan could be by 5 years get to 85%, completely making that up. Or you could have staged incremental annual targets. I think the real value of the continuum for the planning purpose is it potentially gives us a baseline. We can talk about this more later, but just really briefly, I think the prevention plan in San Francisco is different from the care plan, and the prevention plan has a lot more sort of target numbers. It's just a little more specific, because I think the baseline is easier to achieve. In the care plan, it's really, the data we have is about people in the Ryan White system, but we don't have that much data about people who are privately insured, or so it's very harder to get baselines. But this is something we'll get into. Sorry, didn't mean to diverge onto that. But one issue we'll have is sort of figuring out what level of specificity we want to get to in our objectives. So then we have to have an inventory, which is basically a list. It's really a chart. They want the dollar amounts from each number of providers. We did this chart in the care plan. I don't know if there's one in the prevention plan.
There's
not by agency.
Not by agency. But there is a lot of information about resources.
Yeah. So we can come up. We'll come up with a format and fill in a grid. You know, we'll share it with you. But basically, that's something we'll do is to fill in the resources.
Well, I said you were going to talk about it right there. I think that I remember from the different webinars, we're supposed to do collaboration with the ATCs.
Mm-hmm. Sure. You mean collaboration in terms of planning or filling out
the human resources inventory? I think I read that the AETCs actually have completed resource inventories as part of their awards.
I did not know that.
They give it to us.
Oh, okay, cool.
So we don't have to do it.
So they've actually surveyed agencies to get their workforce compositions and stuff?
I believe it's a deliverable.
Okay.
It is a deliverable.
So we'll have to get that.
AETC. It is one of their deliverables, and they were instructed to share it once this integration process began. So, but there are several. There's more than one AETC in California, but there's one at San Francisco UCSF, right? So that would probably be the one that we would reach out to.
So we have a current council member who actually is our AETC representative, Mary Lawrence Hicks, but she actually will be leaving the council within a month or so. But she might be a good contact.
Mm-hmm. I think Amanda Newsom.
Oh, as well.
The main person, and Mona Bernstein. I'm not sure if they're in the same organization or not, but we have contact with them.
Excellent.
Ben is already proving to be an able chair.
Yeah.
That was great. Thank you. I didn't know.
He's
honest. No, I did not know. That's great. Perfect. Okay, and there's a little bit of an implication that there's a little gap analysis here also at the end, identify needed services in the jurisdiction, which is something we can talk about. I don't think we need to spend a lot of time on it because I think it will come out in the planning, but anyway, just want to mention it. So then we assess needs gaps and barriers, and this is something we can talk about maybe in the next half hour. We wanted to sort of get to. But there is sort of a gap analysis we need to present that sort of lays the framework for our recommendations. And by the way, we have a lot of needs assessments in the jurisdiction. So I'm anticipating, or Michael's anticipating, we can build on mainly what we have, you know, rather than reinventing the wheel. So how do we identify care and service needs, gaps, and then we, you know, identify barriers to prevention of care services along those indicators. Sources of data we use. This is fairly straightforward, where we got things. So are you going to do this one?
Yeah. So, this section of the guidance just lays out how it should be actually written. You can go to the next slide. And explains a little bit about the structure and the emphasis on goals, objectives, strategies, activities, and resources. And they even provide some examples. And one of the things that Robert and I were remarking about when we looked at it was the fact that the examples they provide are pretty vague. So, you know, you can decide it's a work group that you would like to be more specific about the goals and objectives and targets. Because a lot of thought and work has already gone into developing plans in this jurisdiction, either for the care for the Part A application, there's targets, and certainly the update to the jurisdictional HIV prevention plan, which just finished, has some targets as well. So there, it seems that there is a little bit of freedom to be specific or not so specific, and I think it probably depends on your command of information and data that you have access to, et cetera. So we can, as we start to put those together, consider all of those aspects of it. And they do ask that there is some responsiveness, obviously, to the three major goals of the National HIV-AIDS Strategy, which are to reduce HIV new infections, increasing access, and improving health outcomes, and reducing HIV-related disparities in health inequities. So those have been sort of the three primary goals of the National HIV-AIDS Strategy since it first came out. And the section should also identify objectives that are very specifically linked to those goals of the National HIV-AIDS Strategies. And this just, as I said earlier, it's very prescribed how they want this structured and what they want the layout to be. But the content, obviously, is all yours to determine yourselves.
Go ahead. I think it's funny because two objectives, we probably will have 20, but yeah. It's whatever, it's interesting.
Not every area of the country is.
That's true.
Has the riches of data.
This is true.
And expertise as San Francisco does. So, the section on monitoring is this the monitoring. Yes. So we have to describe how evaluation will be done, how the goals and objectives will be monitored in terms of whether they've been achieved or progress towards them, etc. So all of that will be crafted and developed for the plan. Go ahead to the next one. And here's sort of some of their examples. And I think, you know, the next time we will go through what a SMART objective is. I'm sure all of you have had some familiarity with SMART objectives. And it's a pretty standard format that CDC and HRSA require. But we'll review it at the next meeting when we start to really talk about these issues and how we're going to frame it for the plan. Go ahead. And this is just an example of a way of laying it out. Robert and I were also remarking, if you see on the very left-hand column, they provide a time frame of by the end of the entire process of 5 years, but you might decide that there might be interim targets that you would like to show that you've achieved within 2 years, within three, rather than just reaching all the way out to five. So those are all things that the work group will have to be discussing and considering moving forward. This section of the guidance requires some information and discussion by the two councils on the kind of partnerships that and collaborations that are in place, who the key stakeholders are, how they're getting how you are all getting information from them, how they are integrated into the planning process. There's a letter of concurrence, which is something that prevention is probably more familiar with than care, that is going to be part of this process as well, and we'll review what that actually is when we get there. There is community engagement, which both councils are very, very much aware of and very successful at getting community engagement, so this will not be a difficult process, but it does require us to really lay out in detail what that community engagement is and how it's being realized here in San Francisco. And this is just more sort of overview of what community engagement requirements of the guidance and of this new plan should be and what needs to be considered. And we will be talking about each of these sections going forward in greater detail and looking at what resources already are in place and what information we already have that addresses some of this. So, again, just more narrative. I'm going to skip over this so we can get into a little bit more discussion. Robert, monitoring evaluation, monitoring improvement.
Okay. Bring some down. So this is, to me, I always feel this is really simple, but it's a section at the back of the document that describes how it will be monitored. So one of the decisions we'll have to make is what's the mechanism? Is there is it a regular standing item on the Planning Council agenda? Is there a subcommittee that tracks the plan? Is there a quarterly report? Or there may be individual responsibilities for key activities that are new, that are assigned to specific. But just one of our processes in developing the objectives is then also to identify who will monitor. And then, of course, I think we want to build in a process generally where the plan can be modified as you go. So what's the process for, improving it? It's not just etched in stone. But this is the section that describes that. No, I think, yeah, it's pretty straightforward.
Interesting that the way this is written is it says updating planning bodies, but, this San Francisco will be going through a transition of creating one body, so there may be monitoring that has to be done and from both councils until they become one, and then there will be a different monitoring process. Yeah.
With HIV Health Services Planning Council in the past, when we had our three-year comprehensive plan, one of the things that we did to monitor and track the plan was every year we would have a steering committee retreat. Mm-hmm. And the largest focus of that retreat during the day would be going over the plan, sort of what we had accomplished and what we needed to focus on for the coming year, and just to make sure we were mm-hmm. in line with that. So that was one thing on that side that we did that might work as we're merged and more working, yeah. So that we have a retreat once or twice a year to kind of mm-hmm. drill down and really talk about that and discuss that.
What can I ask, what is the current merger timeline? I don't know what.
By June.
Oh, okay, cool.
Oh, wow.
Great. Okay. Mm-hmm. Next, yeah. Do you want to do this one?
Yeah. The final section explains how this is supposed to be submitted and the timeline. So it's due by September 30th. As I said earlier, the timeline for this group will be a little bit earlier because it has to be presented to the council at a meeting in August, right? Is it August? Or
August.
That's what we typically do it. So the HIV prevention cooperative agreement application is due in September. So mm-hmm. I think that might be the timeline that we're using here. So we have to get a letter of concurrence. It's a little different than it has been in the past, but that the resources match the plan. Mm-hmm. So that is separate.
Right.
So I hopefully that works for everyone else here. We don't need to take over the timeline for prevention, but we do need it.
Mm-hmm. I think that balances out with what the care mandates are. With service categorization and resource allocation also taking place at our August summit, it sounds like the letter of concurrence and approval of this plan, that could actually all take place at a fabulous one-day summit.
Exactly. So, right. So, you know, by that date in August, we'll talk about a timeline for this work group and some milestones that we want to achieve on the way to that date in August. But ostensibly, that should be when the plan is frozen, the council has approved it, no more changes can be made, and maybe there might be one or two things that they request either be added or clarified, whatever. But really, by that point, you should have reviewed. I think Robert and I talked about having at least two drafts done that you review as a work group by then, so that you're presenting really the final plan by that August date, and then it can be submitted by the September date.
So we might as well start talking about this as soon as possible. My understanding is that the All Titles, the former All Titles conference is happening the last week in August. Mm-hmm. Normally the summit, and I know this has been discussed previously, takes place on the last Friday. It seems to be an awkward time to have that on the same week that many people might be
going
at this
to
conference. So what we might want to look at, since we want to accomplish this in August rather than September, is the third Friday rather than the fourth Friday. So it might be just where we might want to mark our calendars for that all-day summit happening where this is reviewed and approved.
Before the All Titles.
Yes, so that would be the
week. So they're reviving the All Titles?
They are, back from the dead. It's maybe with new blood coursing through it that combines both prevention and care.
They call it All Parts now.
Yeah.
All parts.
Bring all your parts.
Right. All segments. All. Yeah.
So perhaps whatever that third Friday would be.
Good.
And if you're finished with I actually have a question about an earlier slide. Is it now be the time, or is there?
Yeah. I just had one more. I just wanted to just show. Yeah. So this is the process that began in 2013 that got us here. But if you look at the bottom, it just shows that the guidance was released in June of 2015, and now the September date is when the final plan is due. And Mark, go right ahead.
Can you, it's several slides back. It's so PLWH,
mm-hmm.
right there.
There's a few with that.
Yeah, there's so wherever. So my question is, as far as accomplishing this, would this be accomplished, I mean, maybe it's not this simple, but would this be accomplished simply by representation of PLWH, including consumers, as well as a racially diverse membership of this group, or is it accomplished in other ways?
That's exactly what I was going to raise. Yeah. And I think, can I jump in?
Absolutely.
I think it's an open question. Part of it is, like, I don't know how many consumers are on this group, so that's question A. I think they're looking for a little more than that. So.
Okay.
I think we need to, and I think that in the next item, the 8, I think I'm going to go into that a little about, but I think we should ask the question about, do we want, what level of consumer input do we want, how do we get it, start talking about that, but it's a great question.
So you're seeing it as this group plus more community engagement from stakeholder groups or individuals.
That's how I feel. I feel it's a little pawning it off just to say, oh, we had half the members were consumed. I don't think that's not really the flavor of that.
So we can
talk about it.
Yeah, I think that both sides, though, have a process for bringing in community input. I know when we were doing the jurisdictional plan, there were focus groups, there were different ways.
Right.
So we might look at what's in place to do that,
right.
And where can we add more, or where might more be needed. And that will have to be done rather quickly, because if we plan any focus groups or other kind of community-wide meetings to get input, it's going to have to happen before our first draft is developed. So, yeah.
The Care Council has a PLWH work group,
right.
Which could be a resource
mm-hmm.
yeah.
For reaching consumers.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So,
We'll have to do our own internal inventory of all of these processes to see where things are missing. So, yeah. Was there other questions about the guidance, what we presented? I know we went through it fast. I really encourage you to read through it. There's a lot of information, and we can provide, as I said, the link to the full presentation, which has a lot more detail. So this is really was a pretty quick and dirty overview. But I think the two of them, if you're reading the guidance with the presentation, you'll really get a good sense of what is being asked here of you. So.
I'm realizing that this plan is for the jurisdiction, which is, I always forget the letters, the DMA or DSMA or something. Yeah. I think it's different.
EMA
for care, and I think it might be something different for prevention. Anyway, regardless, it's for all three counties.
Mm-hmm.
And so just acknowledging that, number one. And number two, you know, getting to zero is really been focused on San Francisco, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think then we have to talk about how that links with San Mateo and Marin, like how do we talk about both of those things. And then just something also that I noticed is that some of the metrics and things like that, like getting to zero has developed some metrics. So I think that would be good to look at those and how we could be in line with those so that our entire jurisdiction is on the same page. But that's just something we're going to have to talk about.
Yeah, it's possible that some of those we may just adopt into the plan. That would be awesome, you know, if it fits. Do we have to talk about representation by San Mateo and Marin on this body? It's a good point.
Well,
we have San Mateo here.
Sicily said she wanted to be a member.
Right, okay.
And perhaps if scheduling the call first, she has Kevin as well. She could perhaps send
Kevin.
Yeah,
so
maybe if we can really press home the importance of one of them attending on an ongoing basis as an actual member.
So, anything else on the guidance? Sorry. And again, you know, Michael and I will really be taking the lead on writing most of this and researching most of it, running it all by you, of course, but the key role of this group is to work on that plan section and developing the SMART objectives.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and also doing the gap analysis. I want to minimize that, but then really it's developing. Gotcha.
So, the next slide, if you keep going forward past stop. So we just put sort of today is the beginning of this work group's timeline. It starts today. And it should go through August. And here are some of the milestones that Robert and I wanted to put out there for us to think about. We have February, March, April, May, June, July, to mark where these milestones would be appropriately placed so that we can sort of create a very specific timeline to keep us on track and make sure we're hitting some of these deliverables that need to be reached in order to get to a final plan. So I think we didn't really have a process here, but we wanted to hear from you how often you wanted to meet. One of the things to consider is whether or not this meeting is 2 hours. We I know during the jurisdictional plan we extended a couple of meetings to 3 hours to have more work. It might be that you would rather have one full day meeting and to get a lot of work done and then not meet for a month. So I think this should be maybe an open discussion about the structure of this group's meeting. And then it'll be probably a little bit more clear how we can fit these milestones into that timeline and how you want to move forward as a group.
So I think as the two people who are probably most familiar with the guidance, I would actually love it if hear from the two of you what you feel you need from the group.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, we've talked about it. You know, I think my thought, but Michael, jump in. You know, for the next couple of months, I think we'll present what we have, do some preliminary gap analysis, February, March, maybe even into April. So that could be in 2 or 3 hour formats, I think. I know 3 hours is hard, but another thing we could do is schedule 3 hour meetings and then have the option and then move them to 2 hours if we don't think we need it, but just hold the time so we have some flexibility. But I think I like the framework that we've done in the past with the care plan, which is around the time we're ready to start formulating objectives, have a longer meeting. So either a half day or, God forbid, like 6 hour meeting. But it could be, you know, with break and food and stuff. Maybe. I'll make something. Make a casserole. No, it could, like, to sort of formulate in that day is maybe useful to think about in April or May having a longer. But open. I think we're open to two or three hours. I know I'm in favor of monthly meetings. Another thing that I've done in the past is, you know, have also, you know, we can line up a conference call every other week, but I don't think, you know, just to have that as a hold if we need one, but I don't know if this process will need that. Mm-hmm.
I think I agree with what Robert said. I think there is sort of a heavy burden in terms of meeting and work up until the first draft, which we were envisioning around June. So, and then the June meeting can just be a review. You will have gotten the draft, first draft. It'll be just feedback on how it looks, what's missing, where we're going. That can just be a normal meeting. And then July is to review the presentation for the council meeting in August. So there is sort of a heavy load in the beginning here as we bring all of these resources to light and look at what needs to be done. And I think that probably the meeting monthly is necessary. February and March should be 3 hours. And then one sort of long meeting to get, you know, all the goals and objectives hammered out. And then we'll meet again in June when we have the draft. So maybe May will be skipped. We'll see. Sort of leave that as an option.
Yeah, or the planning meeting may be a bit. Yeah, one or the other. I mean, something I think it depends where we are. Yeah, with our.
But does that answer? I mean, I think, you know, there's heavy in the beginning, and then we can sort of taper off as we get towards that July date for the review of the presentation.
I think this fits in, not in recent years, but in prior years. In years prior to a couple years past, we had a steering retreat, which was often an all-day, not usually ending up to be an all-day affair, but mm-hmm. certainly scheduled as an all-day affair,
right.
where we reviewed the goals of the comprehensive mm-hmm. plan. So that sort of fits in within the care council paradigm. So what we could do moving forward then is to schedule, say, a monthly three-hour meeting from, say, 3 to 6 through April, maybe look at April as the target month mm-hmm. for a retreat, or however it should be mm-hmm. termed. Mm-hmm. We have joint council meetings for sure in May and potentially in April. I mean, in March, so April is kind of a good in the middle there, so we don't have to burden council members too much.
Mm-hmm.
And then sort of just check in moving forward what's needed after that April retreat.
Mm-hmm.
Does that sound good to the group?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Do we want to set meeting dates down?
I would say that at this point we should set meeting dates for 3 hours for February and March, and at that March meeting decide whether we can have that
mm-hmm.
all day thing in April or if we need one more mm-hmm. month.
Okay.
But at least have those first two meetings
mm-hmm.
set as 3 hour blocks of time.
How does this time and date work with expanding an hour into the evening? So this is the
fourth Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
Making it 3 to 6 rather than 3 to 5. Does this work for folks?
Mm-hmm.
Rather
yes,
than
yes.
If you can cut out the whole doodle portion of this.
That's
what usually
so
what usually happens is
yeah.
the doodle, but maybe we get to skip that.
So the fourth Tuesday would be the 23rd. Oh, excuse me. Yeah. February.
Yeah. So those are the, what are the two dates, the 23rd and the
23rd
and the 22nd.
Okay. Yeah, March has five Tuesdays. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So 23rd and 22nd. 22nd,
right?
March. 23rd, February, 22nd, March.
So that's good for the group. Should we just schedule that as an ongoing basis for the next two meetings?
Beautiful.
Sounds great.
That was the easiest.
It might be a good idea to talk a little bit about the full day, like some possibilities for the full day in April, if we want to do that. If we can cancel it later, but if we talk in March about a full day,
yes,
I was thinking the same thing.
Sure.
Absolutely.
Especially in terms of space. Yeah.
Well, that too. Yeah.
Or people's time.
It's
yes.
The schedule that gets attached.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
We could throw out some. Maybe we should just do that at the next meeting.
Okay.
Come up with maybe the consultants could see what's on there, like what full days could work for you, and mm-hmm. you could bring those here and we could do it.
Great. I would certainly recommend looking mainly at Fridays just because of work weeks for many service providers.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But certainly something
easier dated to
remember.
Yeah.
So when is the next meeting and what time is it?
February 23rd at
3 p.m., right?
3 to 6?
3 to 6, right?
I'm happy to talk about April dates now, but we can wait.
I don't know.
We can wait, but I think just to, as Tracy recommended, maybe start discussing next meeting, because calendaring a whole day should be done.
Right, that's what I'll do as early as possible. Yeah.
So we can start looking at those Fridays in April, what might be the best. I see the latter part. But, that could certainly be, a doodle poll at that point. We could even send out a doodle, actually, for all of the Fridays in April, unless we want to take out the first Friday.
Yeah, or the first couple.
Yeah. And then we could throw in a couple of days there, just for fun.
And there's five Fridays in April.
Great. So the last three.
Oh, perfect.
Oh,
so the last three.
Three. We can do a doodle for the first
three.
Love
it.
So the others. Okay, yeah, that was great. So the other thing I wanted to mention, and I mentioned this to Michael, and we can discuss this later, but my only this is the only thing I wanted to say about the August sort of presentation to the council is if we're considering some new ideas, new concepts, my preference would be to not wait to August to vet them through the councils. I think if we're considering something new, I think it would make sense in May to maybe share them with the councils, get feedback, so we don't do all this work to develop. I don't know if there will be radical ideas. Probably not. But, just so that we build in that possibility of some council presentations if needed, so that we don't develop these things in August and have them get, then we have to go back, meet again as a group to fix them. So that was just my only other.
I think that's a great idea. The May council meeting, however, will be my assumption is entirely taken up with discussions of how we are, of all the actual motions coming forward that allow us to merge. However, June will ideally be our very first merged council meeting, and what better way in some ways to see yourself as a merged council meeting than to actually talk about and be presented about integrated planning.
Mm-hmm.
So would June be...
Yeah, I would. I mean, Michael, I don't want to. If you don't,
I think that's great.
I think we should plan on it. I'd like to be written in the agenda. Yeah,
sort of
for
preliminary
like
work that the work group has done.
Great. We're actually doing a presentation review at the next committee meeting, so that will certainly.
I would definitely.
We can do it together. But I'm just not putting it all on. But yeah.
Is it possible that I thought I heard you say there might be a March joint meeting?
Yeah, that's been discussed quite a lot lately.
I should know all this, but I have had distance. But maybe there could be just some, laying of the groundwork at that March meeting. Here's what the group has accomplished so far. Here's these meetings that are coming. Maybe some highlights of what some of the discussions have been.
Yeah, distribute the guidance.
I don't think there'll be time on the May, but March, I think that'd be...
Yeah, March is what I was thinking. And then it's just more like people are feeling included all the
time. Right, exactly.
And then a little bit fuller presentation in June, and then the final...
first major agenda item for our merged meeting.
Mm-hmm. Love it.
Yeah, we can get input too. You know, if we need it on some ideas in June.
We don't have dates for you yet because we have yet to determine what our ongoing merge council schedule would be.
Mm-hmm. That's fine.
Is that it?
That's it for that agenda item.
We are 10 minutes ahead of schedule.
Yeah.
But we have 15 minutes budgeted for agenda item 8, and that's initial discussion of information.
Right. Okay. Yeah, so
and we've accomplished some of 9 already. So.
Yeah.
Right, right.
Yes.
So I put this agenda item on here just because I want to begin to raise the subject of whether we think there's any additional information that we need to gather that we don't already have as a jurisdiction. And I think the second question we should fold in, as per Mark's suggestion, is how we address PLWH involvement and input. So in this item, I think the first part may be fairly straightforward. There's so many assessments done in this jurisdiction, so many reports we have. There may not be gaps in our knowledge. But I just want to put it to the group, are there any sorts of topics where we need a little more information to start really making decisions and talking? I put together this little list off the top of my head of just emerging issues in just in HIV prevention and care, but not as anything like an inclusive list, but just to sort of get the thinking going, or particularly around issues that are new and coming forward. Some of it useful to run through this just to sort of jog people's thinking, and we can also consider this next month, you know. But you know, some of the things that I think are new are obviously PrEP is a big deal. To what degree do we want to talk about expanding our outreach? Are there underserved populations in PrEP, such as women? I raised the question of PrEP in incarcerated settings. I think there's a lot to kind of consider around there. PrEP reimbursement may be something I don't maybe know enough about. Mm-hmm. I know there are gaps in PrEP reimbursement. I know I'm going to educate myself on that. PEP and PrEP, I feel like PEP sometimes post-exposure gets a little short shrift. Is there a need to link PEP and PrEP outreach more? Do provider education outreach? What are our goals for PEP? I mean, is that something that is a priority in the jurisdiction? Long-term medication adherence support will continue to be the driving issue in care going forward. And to what degree do we want to explore alternative strategies for long-term adherence, using more peers, or there's a lot of, I think, questions around there. There are emerging treatment options that will change the landscape. I don't know if we want to consider them or not. For example, the one shot that lasts 3 months, which will change the way we're able to monitor adherence, because you will have to go theoretically into the doctor's office and get that shot. The goal will become then getting people back in. getting people back in 3 months,
right,
versus having to make sure they're taking it every day. Totally different, and in a way, maybe easier, but something to talk about. I think I think transgender health is a key issue. There's a lot of moves to incorporate more transgender health services in HIV clinical settings, like hormone treatments, mm-hmm, early reassignment. Treatment, I think that may already be happening in the jurisdiction, so we don't have to consider it. Again, there's just topics in my head. Hepatitis C treatments that are now curative, very important, and it seems like the HIV clinical setting is becoming the default setting for hepatitis C treatment. So looking at, is that a role that we want to sort of embrace, and take that on? To what extent does that allow us to maybe draw more at-risk people in if we're treating Hep C, and then just the aging population, I think there's a need to explore models of, as the HIV clinical world becomes the geriatric treatment world with HIV, where practical, do we need to look at improving the capacity of HIV clinics to do better aging care? you know, do we want to propose models that involve geriatric consultation or interdisciplinary teams, better assessment of aging-related impacts of HIV? So those are just a few things that I think are new, and but I don't know if that's useful or not, but maybe we can talk about it next. Maybe people can sort of think about this, you know, for the next meeting, and we can see what we need to gather.
Yeah, I would suggest, I think this is a great jumping off point, but it might be good to review the jurisdictional HIV
definitely
prevention plan, the Part A application, sort of see if any of these topics have been touched on there. And you can, Robert and I will leave our contact information between now and the next meeting as more of these types of ideas come up, to email them to us so we, you know, make sure that we're getting more information prepared for the next meeting. If there are other topics that sort of jump out at you as you review the other documents. But remember, there's already a lot of planning and policies, and et cetera, in place. And I know some of these may be touched on in other areas already.
Yeah.
And so
I think
just a thought.
Yeah, I think for sure that's good that we should probably send out the last, we mentioned this, the last prevention and care plans to everybody. Relatively quickly, so you can just see what was in them and see the differences between them. That's just one thing. But but anyway, go ahead.
No, that's it.
No, Tracy was talking.
Oh, sorry.
I just was going to throw out some other thoughts
just to
kind of get our thoughts going, and it sounds like we'll discuss more in detail. But when you were talking, I was thinking about like holistic approaches, mm-hmm. you know, that it's not just HIV, but that people are getting care for whatever's mm-hmm. going on, like hepatitis C, TB. Tobacco cessation, that's something we're trying to work on now, is how to incorporate that, because that's really the killer of, you know,
mm-hmm.
most people. And then STDs.
Yes,
something
yes.
that we really have to grapple with here. Are STDs going to continue to attention to? Yes, syphilis, gonorrhea, and chlamydia are all on an increase in San Francisco. And it's throughout the country, it sounds like. Has the Care Council had a presentation from Susan Phillips?
Not recently.
I would strongly recommend it because it's very interesting. And then, you know, the things that are coming up also are rapid linkage to care. And you have, so re-engagement and retention in care.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just throw those headings
yeah,
out
yes.
there too.
Yeah, yeah. Is there any, a side point maybe, but is there any, have you done any research in this jurisdiction about that, the idea that PrEP may be a causal factor in the STD?
Yeah, there's a lot of conversation about it, and I think a lot of the conversation is about PrEP and treatment, you know,
mm-hmm.
both of those. You know, viral suppression that people
oh,
are
right,
worried
right,
about, HIV transmission, and it does look like STDs started to increase around the time that viral suppression as a concept was.
Mm-hmm.
And some people think it's PrEP, and some people think it's not PrEP. So,
mm-hmm.
I think, but there is information, I think, that Henry Fisher Raymond would be someone that could share information. He talked about that at the HBC the
mm-hmm.
other day, right?
Yeah.
And also, there's some other stuff going on that's being brought forward.
So that raises the question of integrating STD testing and treatment into PrEP monitoring. But it's interesting. I mean, maybe I shouldn't raise it, but if it is causal, is that okay? You know, I mean, is that an okay trade-off as long as you're doing the testing? It's an interesting thought. But
it's a really great conversation, like about sexual health.
Yeah, harm reduction.
Mm-hmm.
So great list. A few things that pop out to me as far as the second bullet point, potential undeserved PrEP population.
Whoops!
maybe underserved PrEP and PEP. Actually,
yes, yes.
Because PEP is never talked about on the council, and I think it's something that we need to focus a lot more on. On the last bullet point, I think that's great. That's absolutely where we need to always be keeping an eye out. But I think because of what the Care Council has also heard around a lot of challenges with changing benefits landscape,
mm-hmm.
Also challenges around social isolation, you might want to actually make it need for, not just simply around HIV clinic settings, mm-hmm. but within the care continuum as a whole. So definitely clinic, highly important, not the most important, but within other services that might not be within the clinic settings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's maybe actually even a separate, because this is geriatric, which is not even referred to, you know, the vast majority of older, but those could be sort of aging with HIV issues, support needs, and mental health, and substance.
And then the last thing, I think because the council was spoiled by two just wonderful presentations from two wonderful SPINS projects, we saw a lot of what you're talking about in the third to last, the need for transgender health services and clinical settings, the strategy, et cetera. But we also saw a need for more innovative approaches to hard-to-reach, medically indigent, perhaps, population that whose challenges are increasing as the city itself changes and who are becoming harder and harder to reach and often, you know, are high users of the system and often through, you know, emergency room services. So I think that's a population that might in some ways be shrinking, but their youth will continue to stay high level and maybe even increase.
I guess that's tied into the impact of the housing shortage and high cost.
Yeah, and I think you can get a lot of good information actually from those SPINS projects themselves. Dean can connect you.
Great. Yeah, good.
And maybe in the meanwhile, Allie, if you could just forward the two presentations to Michael and Robert. Yeah.
Great.
San Mateo County just started at the beginning of January. We actually started a homeless street medicine program to really, it's around ED usage, right? So folks are going into EDs as their primary care facility and they're homeless. And often people are being discharged from facilities without a place to go, but they're still in need of critical care. Mm-hmm. So we now have homeless street medicine going out twice a week, and already we've had an HIV-positive patient that we couldn't get into clinical care because they were lost, found through the street medicine program, and was able to get linked back to care. So I think there's a lot of possibilities around looking at homeless populations as a place where we can start wrapping around care in that respect. Mm-hmm. We're also doing rapid HIV and Hep C testing with our street medicine program, which is, you know, thinking about how we can get field delivered therapy to people we lose and can't get into care and get treated for STIs. So I think there are a lot of potential with those folks that are usually, you know, lost and can't find them. Mm-hmm.
I think another current issue, I don't know what role it will play in the plan, but something about outbreak prevention. I know with Indiana, there's a lot of talk about CDC and person wanting jurisdictions to have outbreak prevention plans or outbreak preparedness be a part of their plans.
So that's like new epidemics or?
Well, with Indiana, there was the outbreak among people who inject drugs. So I think.
HIV outbreak? Oh, okay, sorry. I just wanted to
say
that. Yeah. No, it's okay.
Yeah.
And by that, you mean like within specific population?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that's interesting because in terms of what you guys were handling just recently was, you know, there was MRSA, then there was the fentanyl releases and a bunch of stuff and that sort of chat and a bunch of other divisions were on top of. And I think I was in these conversations nationally, they were just like, wow, you guys are really quick. I'm like, yeah, you know, we're already on top of, like, this is a summer destination for a lot of MSM, HIV positive MSM. So there was already information going out that, you know, these infections happening within your community, specifically around summer travel. So Leech, you know, Chicago, or really Chicago. So I think that was something that was, I think, the first time we tried doing that. But it was a conversation that happened nationally of the way that we organize those communication structures within our.
Yeah, meningitis.
Meningitis, that's what it was.
But yeah, I think that's a great point, though. Like, what is our communication strategy? And we do have this internal thing, you know, an emergency preparedness, but it's so much better if communities are, A, informing how we do it, and involved. So I think that's really
interesting. So I'll revise this list, just, again, as a discussion thing, you know, to have. But I think, yeah, maybe a little homework would be to think about what we need to gather. So the other piece is and Michael, stop me if I'm just gabbing too much. The other piece is the PLWHA involvement. We've got some time to talk about it. what do people think about strategies? You know, I'm always, you know, wary of using one or two focus groups as a surrogate for the entire community, but we need, it is important to get input. And I would also say that maybe there's a preliminary information gathering, but another way we could look at it is once we've developed preliminary recommendations, running them by focus groups of people with HIV to get input. It's another way, because I don't know, but it's just a prejudice, but to do that thing where you sort of say, what are your needs? You know, we have done that. We kind of know what we get. There's some symbolic value to doing the work, and I don't even want to just dis it as symbolic, but you know what I mean. We know what the needs are. It's housing, it's food, it's transportation, it's employment. So I think we know a lot about that, but another way would be to have input after we sort of boom, begin to develop. But what do people think? I don't want to say too much.
Where along the timeline?
I don't know. You know, it's a good question. It's difficult because I don't know what we're going to be coming up with. If we're adopting a lot of getting to zero strategies that we're all comfortable with, there's not really a need for a lot of input there. If there's a new idea around, you know, say, expanding PrEP to new populations, we can get input on how best to do that, what success we could expect, what barriers we'll find. So, you know, I don't know off the top of my head what the need, what that might look like, but we could save that. But, I mean, I guess one question is, do people feel we should have a process in the next 2 or 3 months where we do gather input directly from consumers, and how would we do that?
Well, it sounds like we could do one or the other, or perhaps both.
Or both.
But if we're looking at taking a written plan out, either in the early stage or the draft stage, one thing we might be able to do is to take it to some of the community advisory boards from some of our providers to get some feedback.
Because mm-hmm.
a lot of them already have structured meetings, so just be reaching out to them to find out when their meetings are and get some kind of a roadshow
mm-hmm.
to
mm-hmm.
get some of those larger ones. And get
like
some
agency caps?
Yeah. Get some review and feedback on that. We did that with district specifically to the DPH and UCSF clinics a couple years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Kevin and Sunday did most of that. And it was affordable and effective. That's an option.
Yeah.
One idea.
And we can take, we don't have to show them every part of it.
Right.
You know, we could get feedback on the things that we really feel we would benefit from input from.
Right.
And I think, if it is, let's say it's a proposal to expand transgender health and wellness services, there could be, you know, an idea to do a transgender health center, or it could be incorporating, you know, broadly building capacity to incorporate transgender health. We could bring that to a transgender focus group and say, which is likely to be more successful. Like, I'm just totally hypothetical.
Mm-hmm.
But there might be an advantage to sort of keeping that option open as we come up with ideas.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense? But again, without knowing where we'll go. So it's, I guess that, we can leave that, you know, for now. But if we are going to get info in the next 2 months, we sort of need to start doing that now. So I guess what do people think about that in the next 2 months? Should we have some focus groups or go to, you're talking about cabs of agencies, right? Like,
right.
Got it, yeah.
So there are a lot of, so I'm not going to lose this as well, but there's already a lot of sort of like community advisory boards or a lot of community groups that we can tap into already that really do that anyway to pass, you know, turn it into something different.
Mm-hmm.
I think my question to you is, what is your capacity to actually have something prepared within the month? Because usually some of the stuff we kind of sort of do it towards not a final draft version, but close to a final draft version, so we know that this is exactly what we're backing and being better prepared for these community boards or just community
mm-hmm.
bodies. Just because, you know, if there's an input somewhere that is totally drastically different, you know, is it within our intent to then alter what you're presenting, or are you incorporating that input in terms of like next steps or in terms of like a gap that has to be filled within a certain amount of time?
Yeah, it's a great question.
I think there's two things actually that might have to happen simultaneously. One is that what some of the things that Robert was just mentioning seem to be very targeted, specific issues that we would need feedback on right away and wouldn't require presenting the entire thing.
Right.
But for example, this is something we're thinking of integrating into the next five-year plan and it affects your community, we would like to get your feedback on how to best, you know, respond to it. So that those could be like, you know, rapid, the rapid model of getting feedback, as opposed to, I think, having community forums where you're introducing the entire integrated plan for review. I think they're two different things and two different needs and should be represented in the plan. And it both should be represented, that both things happen.
Yeah.
So,
if we, at the next meeting, if we identify the target populations, then I think we can move forward with focus groups or whatever in the following month.
That
should probably be our highest priority.
That's a great idea. So instead of just saying consumers, we can identify subgroups like young men of color who have sex with men, or
that will make it much
easier. Much easier.
Yeah.
And then we could go. We could have two meetings with a focus group. Let's say we had a transgender group. We could meet with them initially for input, and then if we want to go back to get their feedback on ideas, we could do that. You know.
Also, the Care Council does needs assessments every year of targeted populations,
right.
And if those line up, we could provide data as well.
Right, and those, we'll definitely use those, right? But that's part of the question is maybe that's enough, you know? But I think, maybe at the next meeting we can identify groups that we know we're going to want to get input on. Mm-hmm. And it could be older, much older, like men and women with HIV in their 60s or 70s. We can think outside the box, you know? Where do we not usually get input, you know, that would be useful for us? Yeah. But we can't do a lot of this because it's not a needs assessment, you know.
Right,
there's
just a little bit of, And you might consider that after the first draft is done and you review is when you maybe do a community forum or some way to introduce that broadly so if people want to provide any kind of feedback or input before the next and final draft, that would be the opportunity to do it. I don't know if you need to have a completely separate forum or if it's a widespread invitation to that council meeting where we're presenting some of this, if you want that to turn into a surface or not.
But I'm certainly willing to facilitate, two or three focus groups, co-facilitate two or three focus groups, in the next couple of months. You know, I can definitely make room for that. Because I'm going to be interested,
I just want to say, I think it's important to see what data we already have.
Yes.
You know, and build on that, so what the gaps are. Our existing data.
So how do we, would it be worthwhile doing a, an inventory, a really rough inventory of data, Tracy? I don't really have that sort of a list of, I don't want to, it could be this huge.
Yeah.
I want to make it cumbersome. I'm sure you could name 10 things off the top of your head.
I don't have to think about that. I mean, we just did some focus groups and forums with Anya. It was about STDs. We did the focus group. That's coming to me. We're working on a social marketing campaign right now, so we had some focus groups with men of color and transgender women, specifically about PrEP. And I'm actually going to take this one and leave them tonight, so I'll learn more what's in there. It was about social marketing, but still, I think the concepts will be transferable to other issues. But let me think about that some more. Maybe everyone should think about, what are some recent data collection, from the community?
We could set up a Dropbox or something and just put studies in. I don't know. I feel they just can sit there. It's more useful to summarize them.
I think I have, from the jurisdictional plan, a lot of these data sources sort of, we spelled it out, and I might even have put together a table. So I'll see if I can resurrect that, and we can maybe just add to it to see what is the most recent. We incorporated some of the focus groups that we did. Were those the STD focus groups?
Just with the STD focus groups.
So, but there were others too. There was a lot of data coming from multiple sources.
And there's our networks. I mean, they're not community people, but they are providers. I mean, we do have a transgender advisory group that works closely with us. I mean, there are a network of syringe access providers that mm-hmm. give you a lot of information about that. Mm-hmm. And that's all kind of internal for us. I mean, I would more than happy to share all
that. I wonder if it'd be worth spending half an hour, 45 minutes at the next meeting just really briefly presenting on key studies that are out there. Nothing elaborate, but like, I don't know, Tracy, maybe you could do 5 minutes, you know, reviewing the key findings of the SCD focus groups. Or mm-hmm. is that practical? Or I'd rather hear it as a group, personally, than...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean...
I don't know.
I think if just because of time, you know, it seems like we have, about 2 months that you want to get
ideally.
The information that you need.
Yeah.
So if you look at, you know, the recent needs assessments, the focus group results that we have, but then narrow down exactly what the population of interest is. So it sounds like we're looking at trans, we want to focus on PrEP, and then there's a focus on aging, mm-hmm. And then the STDs piece. So if we narrow it down to like 4 or 5
mm-hmm.
areas of interest,
mm-hmm.
and then go over the data that we
yes.
found recently,
mm-hmm.
you know, last year, that
mm-hmm.
would be a good place to start.
Great. I think that sounds great. Yeah. Do people agree with that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Then it would just make, we can make a decision very quickly. Yeah. And I think we also talked about doing a brief EPI presentation at the next meeting. Is that beneficial to people, or do people know the... feel you know the data. I always feel like it's kind of a nice grounding, and but
it's a nice grounding. But I feel like
everybody knows
on the
it.
Care side, we do.
You just are in it.
We just had it at the last stage.
Okay. We don't need that then.
It is fascinating, though.
Yeah, it just might be. How do we want to put it in the plan?
Right. Well, we'll see what
yeah.
comes out of that webinar.
Yeah.
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 You guys both have the most recent annual report from the EPI.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yes.
It's a masterpiece.
That's available
yeah.
on their website. Yeah, so that's, I think everything's going to be.
Yeah, good. Oh, yeah, that's easy. This is great. I think that's really a solid strategy. You know, look at the subgroups, look at the data we have, and then just come up with a strategy next time from there. And then we'll have a month or two to gather that. Great. And I'll redo this list again, just so we have it as a running sort of prompt.
So in terms of next steps, it seems like we already have 2 agenda items for the next meeting, which we've scheduled for February 23rd from 3 p.m. to 6 p.m. And anything else that we need to do in terms of work group assignments and maybe some ongoing meeting dates? Are there any work group assignments that we want to discuss?
I guess I have a question about minutes. You know, I don't know if that's something that the group wants. I personally hate to type up long minutes, but I'd be happy to take responsibility for doing some action minutes, like a one-pager, if that's useful to people, where it has the dates we can't decide it on. Would that be helpful, or should I volunteer? Oh, do you do that?
We take
that. Yeah, never mind.
Yeah.
I always forget that Shanti's are, yeah.
I mean, if you'd like to, certainly took
No, I was trying to be nice. But, yeah.
Can you bring it up?
I work in the East
Bay
a
lot,
and we don't have that. So I'll tell you. We don't have anything, you know. Well, they don't, I should say, yeah. No, never mind. Awesome.
Noted.
We had talked about all of us reviewing some documents, like the jurisdictional plan and the
right.
the Part A grant application. Can we just have that sent out to everybody and send people responsible for getting those?
I can send it to all
the jurisdictional plan.
Okay.
And then
we can
do you want me to send? I'll send you the Part A grant and the last care plan. The Part A grant is really exciting reading. I envy you all.
Dynamic writing.
Oh, well, that's the key.
It is.
Like a gripping novel.
It's very
thank you.
I see that there's actually supposed to be public comment on every single item. Is that public comment for items, I have to say 8 and 9?
Although, you know, the you can do that, of course, if you'd like. We don't find ourselves asking for public comment in the smaller work groups or committees. The sort of the need for someone to step out of their council role and speak as public as often, if that happens, which is I can count on one hand. Usually during the agenda item 3, and so if there's no public, necessary one.
Well, it looks like we have our ongoing meeting dates. We have some next steps. Before we move on to evaluation. Great. Who has the evaluation?
not the chair side. We don't usually evaluate our smaller meetings, but it's simply because I feel that that's something that prevention is used to doing. So if that's not there for prevention either, then there's no evaluation.
Well, I think we should agree as a group if we want evaluation. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah.
I could do a quick
list
also.
Sorry, quick
what? I can do a quick, what did you like about this meeting? What did you not like about this meeting? I could do something like that, if you'd like me to.
Or do you want a formal evaluation? Do you want a formal evaluation?
That's bad, by the way. You know, it's not up to me in the slightest. I have my personal opinions on a formal evaluation at every meeting of a work group, but it's up to the group.
I don't know that a formal evaluation is really necessary, but I think maybe some sort of feedback is good, where people can feel free to speak freely or write freely. So like the positive, negative thing on a piece of paper is...
I think in particular, if the work of consultants are so central to this work group, it could be a good vehicle for any kind of feedback.
For the next meeting.
So how would you like that to look? We can put that together as well. What is it?
Ben's offering to do a plus delta, which is where we just say right now what we thought went well and what could be changed for next time. Okay. I mean, you're offering to do it today, and then I think the group could decide if you want to do it on a regular basis.
Mm-hmm. Is that okay? Mm-hmm. So let's start with lessons. So what do you like about today's meeting? And you'd like us to continue doing for following meetings?
Okay. And the pace of the meetings are going to go up. And I agree.
I think we laid a solid groundwork as a group.
I love structure, and I'm digging this agenda. I love the structure of the agenda.
I think all the ideas generated were a high point for me. I also like how this frames our upcoming work as a merge council.
I'm appreciative of the. It's clear that the consultants are working together. You know, I was a little concerned about that, having two consultants, but it's obvious that you're in good communication.
Anything else?
I think in general, things like this is really helpful to have a screening list that we can all add to. Mm-hmm. Just whenever we have to do any sort of brainstorming. List making, it's good to have a starting point.
And some deltas, so things that you'd like to change for meetings moving forward.
I don't know if I want to change anything about the meeting, but I am very disappointed in council member turnout. Mm-hmm. And I think we need to reach out to the councils, try to get a few more people interested in providing input. Mm-hmm. We have 3 from each side. So maybe that's all that we can hope for, but I'd like to try to get a little more.
I actually have a couple. I think it's just sort of suggestions. I would like for the leadership body, that joint leadership meeting, to actually sit down and try to figure out a calendar for reals, because I feel that there's a lot of things that we're deciding on doing within this group. That's great, but I don't think that the leadership body is still having the foresight to be able to plan how that's going to be presented to both councils. So that's one. And the second thing is, during this process last time with Michael DeMeo, there was a lot of material that went out, and it gets really confusing. I don't know what's going to be our repository for a lot of the documentation that's going to be coming out. So is it a base camp? Is it a Dropbox? What is it? Because a lot of the time you come to these meetings, it's like a stack of papers, and then mm-hmm. next week it's like, oh, new draft, or new ideas, and just like, well, where are we? So mm-hmm. I feel there has to be something that's much more centralized and better accessible by members, because this is a lot. And there's stuff that I have on prevention that's easy for me to get, but then there's a lot of care stuff that I don't have access to, so that has to be one place where we all access that.
Can we create a SharePoint Drive eventually? I think I'm also going to call them out later. Right. Would that be something that would help solve this?
Something. Yeah, something. Yeah.
Do you have a preference about what?
No, I'm just ready to dial in. Right.
Yeah, I have experience working with Bitscamp, Dropbox, SharePoint, so we can talk and see what's similar.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's a great idea to set something up right away so that there is some place that everybody can go if they didn't get an email, if it's something attachment or forgot to pick something up at a meeting. It's always available somewhere where they can pull it down from. So it's just the platform that one uses. I'm familiar, I mean, I use Dropbox for all my projects, but if their SharePoint is better, that's fine. So do you want to... how do you want to make that decision? Should we take a vote here? Which do you prefer? Or
I think because a lot of this information will be actually input by the consultants, although, of course, council staff is aware in any way possible. What would be easiest for the two of you?
I don't know all those platforms, to be honest. I just use Dropbox. Mm-hmm. But I'm open to the others, I just don't know very much. I guess we could look into it and just make a decision.
Yeah, and then we'll get everyone's email so we can connect everybody to it. And we'll try to do that rather quickly because the plans and everything in there right away.
We'll go ahead and send out some emails with some attachments, but we'll also load them.
Yeah.
And we can keep the most updated versions of plan drafts in there. And stuff.
I
would
just say, I'd like to probably invite everyone
with yes.
you
right.
Yes,
right.
Just to make it easy.
Mm-hmm.
Any other advances or recommendations? Well, with that, I think we should adjourn the meeting.
Yeah.
Wow.
1 minute.
Two.
So, Ben, can I talk with the two of you and Allie?
Okay.
As far as looking at their agenda.